Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The Federal Reserve in Texas must be in some rural setting with its view of feral pigs and wild turkey.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer or mobile device instantly streamed by Netflix to save you time, money, and hassle. Free 30-day trial now at netflix.com/APM.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. On Tuesdays, we get our macro look from Julie Neiman, analyst at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis, to talk about something that this time sounds a little less like an economic briefing and more like Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. Hello, Julie.
Morning, David.
So one of America's top central bankers is a fellow by the name of Richard Fisher.
He's the head of the Federal Reserve in Dallas and a noted inflation hawk.
Okay, so market players parse his words for nuance on future monetary policy. So what did he call some investors yesterday? Feral pigs?
Well, he's been very consistent on this. He's concerned that we can't have quantitative easing going on forever. And he says the bond vigilantes, in true piggy fashion, will find a weakness in the market and go after it. And that's exactly what they're doing right now. They're looking for weaknesses in the economy and the financial structure, and that's why they're chasing interest rates up.
Fisher was full of them. His other line about quantitative easing using bonds to stimulate, quote, I don't want to go from wild turkey to cold turkey overnight.
Probably the biggest thing he's saying right now is stop whining. There's not going to be any more free money. He's not going to take everything, all the quantitative easing, away from the markets instantly, but he is serving coffee. We don't have any inflation right now because banks are not pouring all that free Fed money into the loans. They're true piggy fashion thwarting the Fed and holding on to it. They're investing in treasuries, and they're earning on their free money at no risk. Fisher, though, really fears inflation and asset bubbles, like housing bubble, real estate bubble, the investment bubble, emerging markets, junk bonds. He says there is a good, strong hint of inflation in these asset prices.
Julie Neiman, Smith Moore & Company, thank you so much.
You bet.
Why even think of inflation? Well, there's news today that durable goods orders went up more than expected, 3.6%. That's longer-lasting stuff like sofa love seat combinations and airplanes. And looking at 20 big U.S. cities, single-family home prices also beat expectations this morning, rising 1.7% in April, according to S&P Case Shiller. Prices are up 12% in a year. Italy might need a Greece-style bailout within 6 months. Britain's Daily Telegraph uncovered what was supposed to be a private assertion made by Italy's second-largest bank, Mediobanca. Here's why this would be different than cleaning up Greece's debt. Italy is the eighth-largest economy in the world. Greece is number 35. Simon Tilford is at the Center for European Reform in London. Mr. Tilford, thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning.
What is wrong with Italy? Has something changed for the worse regarding its debt recently?
Nothing has really changed in terms of its position over the last few months. The changes have come elsewhere. What's happened is that the Fed has indicated that it's going to gradually stop buying up unprecedented amounts of AAA sovereign debt.
Yes, this is the tapering that we've been reporting on, hopefully diligently.
Yeah. So over the last year, investors have been pushed into riskier sovereign debts of places like Italy. Investors have started to move back out, or there's a risk that they will start concentrating their purchases on U.S. debt rather than the debts of struggling economies in the Eurozone, such as Italy or Spain.
Now, there was an active debate about whether or not perhaps it would be most prudent to allow Greece to just fall out of the euro. In the case of an economy the size of Italy, that's not an option. That is a country that's too big to fail, as it were.
Italy is a very interesting one because of all the struggling eurozone economies, Italy is the best place to leave. Italy's government is running what we call a primary budget surplus. So they could leave the eurozone, default on their debt, and still be able to pay the salaries of public officials and all of their liabilities. It also doesn't have foreign debt. So Italy could say, look, unless you give us concessions, we're going to leave. If Italy were to leave, it would almost certainly make a Spanish exit inevitable. There would be huge pressure on France. Now, the Italians know this, and it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out.
Fascinating is one word. Simon Tilford at the Center for European Reform, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This podcast is supported by Netflix Instant Streaming. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your computer, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. Streamed now by Netflix, a great value. Netflix Streaming has lots of movie and television options, including past seasons of House of Cards, Breaking Bad, and Arrested Development. Watch them using Netflix Instant Streaming and find thousands of other TV series and movies during your free 30-day trial at netflix.com/APM.
Barack Obama pledged to make climate change a priority, and today the president's giving a speech explaining how he's going to do it, most likely through what's called an executive order, Marketplace's Queenie Kim reports.
Presidents can order federal employees and agencies to enact regulations without approval from Congress. Alan Lichtman is a history professor at American University. He says throughout history, presidents have used executive orders to make their mark.
The Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln was in effect an executive order. Harry Truman used an executive order to desegregate the armed forces.
Lichtman says companies and individuals can appeal to the courts, but it's rare that they overturn executive orders. President Obama is expected to use an executive order to enact tougher regulations on power plants fueled by coal. Kevin Buck is with Clearview Energy Partners.
You have about 2.3 billion metric tons a year of greenhouse gas emissions from the power sector.
That's about a third of the greenhouse gases produced in the United States. Buck doesn't expect the president to issue the order regulating coal plants tomorrow, but he says he'll probably signal that one is coming soon. In San Francisco, I'm Queenie Kim for Marketplace.
A 47-year-old man from Florida is awaiting trial after an alleged $2 million toy shoplifting spree stretching as far north as Bangor, Maine. The man seemed to have had a thing for Toys R Us, starting with what authorities say is a $900 theft of Lego. Who doesn't love the little bricks? But what do we really know about the Danish company that makes the stuff? Wharton business professor David Robertson has just published a book entitled Brick by Brick, How Lego Rewrote the Rules of Innovation and Conquered the Global Toy Industry. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
So Lego's such a part of so many of our lives. I have a bathtub-sized storage container of the stuff in my attic. Of the company, though, people know like one thing. They think it's somewhere in Scandinavia. They might know it's Danish. Why the mystery?
Well, I think part of it is that it's family held and it's out in the middle of nowhere Denmark. There's 3 hours of nothing in every direction from the headquarters of Lego. And I was struck too by, as I learned the story of Lego and I saw this incredibly innovative company, you know, where it is now, that of all the lists of the most innovative companies in the world, Lego wasn't on any of them.
It's a fascinating story. And in the late 90s, some things start to unravel at this company. There's a really depressing line in your book. You remark that in the late 90s, there's data that middle-class kids have grown, quote, remarkably time-compressed and programmed, leaving far fewer hours for the Lego style of open-ended, self-guided play. So Lego runs into this, and what happens?
Well, first they went through this stagnant period, and they brought in a turnaround expert. And he realized that the company had become kind of insular. And so they went out and they found that kids were getting older, younger, right? They're moving away from all the traditional toys, not just Lego, but Barbie and Hot Wheels and the others. And they're moving toward the video games, the PlayStation and the Nintendo. And at the same time, they found that all the other toys had moved their production to China, whereas Lego was continued to make it in Denmark, and the Danish kroner had gotten stronger against the dollar. So while other toys were getting cheaper, Lego was getting more expensive.
So turnaround expert comes in. He's the guy who ran the famous Danish audio company Bang & Olufsen at one point. And he does what looks to me, this is not my expertise, but he looks like he does all the right things.
He does. And the problem was not that they didn't work. Lego innovated like crazy for the next couple of years. The problem was that the products weren't necessarily very Lego-y. There's a whole line of toys called Jack Stone where you could snap them together in a couple minutes. And parents were really disappointed when the kids snapped together the Jack Stone in 10 minutes and then were off and running around the house again. And so there's lots of innovation, but there wasn't a lot of profitability.
So a lot of companies, after a huge process of bringing in the experts and trying to pursue what looked like a rational turnaround strategy, if you're looking again at failure, might have given up. But they didn't. They plugged away at it.
Yeah, what they did is they came back to the brick. They started developing those police stations and fire trucks. The CEO says, we went out and we talked to our customers and we asked them what the brand meant to them. And they told us very clearly that it is about the construction experience. And so by putting that structure around it, they've been able to come back and make the business work again.
How are they doing today?
Unbelievably well. For the last 5 years, they've been growing sales at 24% per year and profits at 40% per year, every year for the last 5 years.
David Robertson is a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School and author of Brick by Brick, How Lego Rewrote the Rules of Innovation and Conquered the Global Toy Industry. Professor Robertson, thank you.
Thanks very much.
What's the coolest thing you ever made out of Lego? Don't say Star Wars. Maybe something you designed yourself. Facebook APM Marketplace, if you could. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.